Welcome back. Last time we set down the question that actually goes somewhere. Not whether experience exists, but what shape it has. Today we map that shape. The model has four parts. Now, one warning before we start, and it matters. These are not places. Nothing here is literally in a location. This is not a map of your brain, and nobody is claiming there's a sphere sitting inside your head. These are four different jobs that experience does. The spatial language, center, interior, edge, is a way of talking, not a claim about anatomy. Hold on to that, and none of this will mislead you. The first part is the center. There's a point that everything is arranged around. You. And not you the personality, or you the soul, or you the person with your name and your history. Something simpler and stranger than that. The bare fact that experiences show up as yours. Right now, you're listening. The sound is arriving somewhere. There's a weight where you're sitting, perhaps a hum in the room, some slight tension somewhere in your body. And all of it is arriving at something. There's a from-here-ness to it. That's the center. And the paper is careful. It is not claiming this is some metaphysical self, a thing that lasts forever, a ghost in the machine. It's making a much smaller claim, that experience has an anchor point, a place it's oriented from, and that without that anchor, nothing would have the quality of belonging to anyone. It's a function, not an object. It does a job. That's all that's being claimed. The second part is the interior. This is everything currently lit up for you. What you can hear right now. What you're feeling. The meaning of these words as they arrive. The mood you're in. The awareness of your own body. Your sense of where you are and what's going on. And all of that is ordered. It isn't raw. It's been shaped into things. Into a chair, a sentence, a worry, an ache. It arrived as something much messier and got organized into recognizable stuff. And the organizing is done by awareness, the active work of turning raw material into structured experience. Awareness selects, integrates, arranges. It is a verb, not a place. The third part is the horizon, and here it gets interesting, because not everything is lit up. Right now, before I mention it, you weren't attending to the feeling of your left foot. It was there. Something was going on down there. But it wasn't ordered. It wasn't part of your furnished, structured experience. Then I mention it, and in it comes. So where was it before? The paper calls that region the horizon. Everything that could be part of your experience but isn't currently. The sounds you're not listening to. The memories you're not having. The thoughts you could think but haven't. The horizon isn't empty. It isn't nothing. It's potential. Material available to be ordered, waiting at the edges.
And now the fourth part. The hard one. And it's the paper's own invention, so let's go slowly. It's called antivalence. Some of what's in the horizon is already half organized. Your left foot sensation was already foot-shaped before you noticed it. A memory you're not currently having is still a memory. It has a form. It's simply not being looked at. That stuff is structured. It's just not lit. But the paper says there must be something further out than that. Something that isn't half-formed. Something that isn't formed at all. Why must there be? Here's the argument, and it's simple and hard to escape. Your experience grows. New things arrive in it. Where do they come from? Not from a shelf of pre-made experiences. Think of the last time you had a genuinely new idea, not remembering something, not combining two things you already knew, but the thing that arrived and surprised you. It came from somewhere. And that somewhere was not a warehouse of finished ideas waiting to be picked up, because if it were, they'd already be ideas, already formed, already yours. And they weren't.
So there has to be a region of pure, raw material. Not unnoticed things, but not yet things at all. Possibility, before it's possibility of anything in particular. The paper calls it antivalence. And here's the move that makes it serious, rather than mystical. Antivalence cannot be described. Not is difficult to describe. Cannot. Structurally, cannot. Because describing something is organizing it. The moment you describe antivalence, you've ordered it, and the ordered version isn't antivalence anymore. It's something that came out of antivalence. You can't catch it, because catching is exactly the operation that turns it into something else. Now that sounds like a cheat. Very convenient. A thing you can never examine. The paper takes that objection head on, and the answer is the reason the whole idea holds. We are not inferring antivalence from a feeling or a hunch. We're inferring it from a structural fact. Experience expands. And expansion has to be expansion into something. That something can't be described from inside the very system that does the describing. So we mark its place, and we stop. It's the same move Kant made about things in themselves. Not something we know, but something we're forced to posit, because of the shape of everything else. Not a known object, a necessary placeholder. And you have felt this, by the way. It isn't abstract. It's that moment when you have a thought that hasn't become a thought yet. When you say, hold on, I've got something, I can't quite... And there is genuinely something there, pressing, real, with no shape yet. That's the edge of antivalence, live, in your mouth. Everyone has been there. Nobody had a word for it. Now you do. Next time, we go to that edge, because it turns out the edge is where everything happens.